Hello and welcome to Dottotech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you can join us today. Our show is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Well, it's week two of our podcast-only version of Dottotech. We'll be back on the radio at the beginning of April, but this week we do have a great show lined up. We're going to start things off with Paul Chatto is going to be joining us. Now, for fans of Canadian comedy, they'll know Paul from the comedy group The Frantics, which is a legendary Canadian comedy group. And Paul, along with being a writer and actor and performer, has long been a technologist. I think I met him about 20 years ago, and we've always had great conversations about technology. Paul has a company called YourWebDepartment.com, which is an online service hosting and allowing people to build and manage their own websites in a very efficient manner. It's terrific for small, medium businesses, for community groups, that sort of stuff. So Paul's going to be filling us in on state-of-the-art as far as web technology and websites goes. We also have Mike Vardy joining us. Mike is an editor at Stepcase Lifehack, which is the Bible for productivity. One of the issues that I have recently with technology is I find that I'm sometimes getting buried in my productivity technology to the point that I'm no longer productive. Mike's going to guide me through that. He's going to talk us through calendars and address books and to-do lists, all of the different technology that fits in that area. Plus, Mike being a big Apple fan, we'll spend some time talking about Apple's new iPad. Teo Horstel from London Drugs also joins us today. Now, as I was looking at the news for this week, one story just leapt off the page at me. It's the end of an era. After 244 years publishing their leather-bound encyclopedias, Britannica is no longer going to be in the book publishing business. They are going to be an internet and online service, a trusted source still for information for schools and libraries, but they're not going to be publishing the Encyclopedia Britannica anymore. Now, the internet, there's a lot of businesses the internet has devastated, but if we look at the numbers, back in 1990, Encyclopedia Britannica sold 120,000 sets of their encyclopedia. Last year, 8,000 sets. 8,000 from 120,000. So their business absolutely devastated by, first of all, the online encyclopedias like Encarta, and then later on by things like Wikipedia and just general web searching itself. So they are going to be an online service still, a very trusted source for schools and education. But no more will they be publishing those leather-bound books which sit on bookshelves and are part of family and school life. I think it's kind of sad. And joining me online now is Paul Chatto. Now, fans of Canadian comedy history will probably know Paul as one of the core members of The Frantics. He's long been, though, a real high-tech guy. I think we connected, about 20 years ago, Paul?
Yeah, some kind of trade show, technical trade show, and we got along.
Yeah, we got along. Well, I don't know if you know, but I had a very short and unhappy career with Second City.
I didn't know that.
You didn't
know
why, that?
And why was it unhappy?
Because I got fired would be the main reason. It was unhappy for me. Happy for them, I think. They were happy to hire me, and then they were happy to let me go. But yeah, I spent some time with Second City.
I was fired from it also.
Really?
Yeah. What was the guy's name? He was one of the founders of Second City Chicago.
Oh, okay.
I guess he was brilliant starting the Chicago group, but not mm-hmm. so brilliant actually teaching outside of it.
Ah.
And he was pretty much a raging alcoholic when he was teaching us at Second City in Toronto. What was his name? Anyway,
let's not mention it after that preamble.
Probably not. Yeah, exactly. And he basically told me that I stunk and get off the stage and comedy will never be my career. And
never be your career.
I showed him.
Yes, you did indeed. And now we're tech guys. Nope.
That's right. Well, I'm both. You know what? I do what I enjoy. And to me, writing a good comedy bit is no different from programming to I guess managing a company now. So
well, and you've always been a guy engaged in tech, and I know we've had lots of conversations in the past about comedy and lots of conversations about tech. And,
I did a PageMaker demo on a previous show of yours.
Oh, that's right. Good heavens, I've forgotten about that. But now you are running a company called Your Web Department, which is, I think, a nice, unique take on hosted website development and content management. And first of all, tell me, why did you guys think that we needed another, basically, web management organization?
Well, this comes from an interesting perspective. I come from a design background. I designed the typefaces. I programmed directly in PostScript. So I, probably more than a lot of people that I knew out there, I was able to have a foot in both camps, both the creative camp and the technical camp. Mm-hmm. And you know what, Steve, I hate to say this, but I heard programmers and some IT people just say the worst crap to non-technical individuals, more often their bosses. And I would just sit there biting my lip thinking, oh my God, these people who are relying on these technical priests to manage and understand what they're trying to do technically, we're telling them a lot of crap, a lot mm-hmm. of BS. And it was just sad. And it was the wrong information. And it was from the wrong angle, the wrong direction that had nothing to do with what the company needed to hear. But the poor person who was managing the company was not technical and had to accept whatever nonsense that they were being given. So we got so mad, I got so mad that we created Your Web Department.
Now, so this is really what we're talking about as far as these challenges go. This is web designers and people designing websites for companies. And then in a lot of cases, they would hold them hostage. They would say, you have to use this, you have to use this. They were the only people that understood the back end of that particular site. So people who had paid money to have a website developed, if they decided to move to another supplier or they just wanted access to their own content, quite often they didn't have access to that content. And it still is a real problem in industry.
I totally agree. And clients who are being held hostage because someone else knows the code, owns the code, knows how to update the code, and every time that the client has to make a phone call to make some changes, well,
Yeah,
that's crap. Sorry.
And in a lot of cases, companies have even allowed that web developer to register the domain in their name and hold it for them and all those sorts of things. So really not good business on the business owner side, but because of ignorance, and I don't mean that in the negative term of ignorance, but because they don't understand the business, they're basically being held hostage in some cases.
Yes, and we won't get rid of the ignorance, the dictionary definition of ignorance, but at least clients who are using our system know that it's their system and they can do whatever they want with their websites. And it really makes me feel good knowing that we have their back.
So basically, your web department is a service which people sign up for, and they pay anywhere between about $20 and $100 a month for your basic services, and you end up hosting their entire website. You give them the tools they need or designers need in order to build and manage the website. Is that in a nutshell?
Yes, and because it's a horizontal environment code base and not a single instance website system, and I can define that later if you think that's an impenetrable concept. But, you know, we're able, every time we make an update to our system, all our clients get updated at the same time. So we're not having to go into a bunch of single instance websites and try to update the code. It's really quite an amazing community, and we update our system almost once a week, and it's fantastic.
So now what you're talking about as far as not a single instance code is that it's built as modules so that people can go in and they can manage the overall content of their site through a very user-friendly interface without actually diving into the actual programming, the code right into the website. But how is it different from sites like a Drupal or a WordPress site, which have become so popular as these open source sites for people creating content management systems?
Well, let's just take Drupal or Joomla. That's a good example of a vertical instance experience. So someone has, well, number one, a programmer for the most part has to build the site. Yes. These are not simple application. So already the client is held hostage. And as you know, every programmer hates the work of every other programmer. So, you know, the idea that you could just hand over a Joomla site to someone else and they'll be fine with it, most likely the programmer is going to say, who did this? This is crap.
Yes, indeed.
So I mean, this transportability is also not, that's a bit of a sham. And so as soon as a single instance website is completed, let's say it was done 2 years ago, and at the moment it's done and running, it starts aging. And as the internet progresses, that site will not progress technologically. So that's the big difference. So if you wanted to add mobile, which is very huge right now, yes, you would actually have to go back to the original developer, if he hasn't moved out of his mother's basement and now has to attend cooking school to make a living, then you're going to be stuck with a charge to add that mobile capability. If you were lucky enough that your original website was structured in such a way that it was mobile friendly. So our system, we are adding tools and capabilities because it's a horizontal platform on an ongoing basis, and all our clients get it. So for instance, a year and a half ago, we added mobile. That means all our clients got free mobile. So that's really the difference, is that we are motivated by following the internet and keeping up with the internet so our clients don't have to. So when they turn to us and say they want this feature, well, more than likely we've already built it and it's there and it's available for them for free.
Now, I used a term earlier on. I used content management system, which is really, in my mind, a better term than website when we're talking about these sorts of sites, because the data that's in your site is what's important and valuable. And it's how we wrap that information, how we package that information, how we deliver that information to different internet platforms, be it a computer, be it a mobile device, be it a tablet. That's what's important. But the content is what's key. So do you guys focus, you let the client just focus on the content and then worry about all of the delivery tools after, but the content will migrate and will be able to be delivered to any platform that they choose.
That's correct. That's really what we're all about. And plus, we're a really good Web 2.0 connector. So we don't want to build everything for people. There's an awful lot of companies out there like MailChimp and Eventbrite who are spending millions of dollars on their cutting edge systems. And we have found ways to use their application programming interfaces to incorporate all that phenomenal experience into our system.
Now, you just threw two names there. MailChimp is an email management system where people can manage their newsletters or they can manage a subscription-based email. And what was the other one you mentioned?
Eventbrite.
And is that an event management system?
Yep.
Oh, okay. It's one that I wasn't familiar with, but I'll have to take a look at. So what are you finding has been the result for your small business clients? What's the word that you're getting from them as far as the benefits of this sort of a system?
Well, for the most part, almost all our clients come to us because they've been hurt in the past by some other date or relationship. And at least 85% of our clients have had a bad previous experience, which I don't know what that says about our industry. I think that's a bad thing. I love their business, but I'd rather not hear that kind of statistic. And most of our clients, a good percentage of them, just want the website done for them. They don't want to build it themselves. Even though our system has all the tools to let them build it themselves, they don't want it. That's really what characterizes our clients, which is why they're willing to pay $50 a month. The people who want it for free, well, they can just go to WordPress. So we have a professional client base. And again, you have to understand, approximately 30% of small businesses don't have websites. Still, to this day.
And it's an interesting statistic. I mean, you threw out 85%. I realize that's iterative, but I probably believe that about 85% of people who have had the responsibility of building their small business's website who aren't web professionals have had a bad experience. I think that's the nature of the game.
Well, they don't know who to turn to. Yeah. I mean, do you turn to a marketing person? Do you turn to a designer? Do you turn to a programmer? Are you going to go do it cheaply, so you're going to turn to your cousin's niece because she just graduated from multimedia school? People build websites for the wrong reason. They build it because their competition has one. Well, I mean, that's not really a go out there, I'm going to take on the world and wrestle it to the ground, and I'm going to make a great experience excuse for building a website. I'm doing it because my Bernie's got one. If Bernie's got one, then I got to have one. Yeah, so,
Now, you folks are based in Toronto.
Yes.
Is your client base primarily in the Ontario area, or have you spread out?
We are all over the world. I mean, we have websites in Brazil, Argentina, Japan, but mostly in the GTA, but lots in the United States. We let designers use our system to build their own website business. Plus, we have a referral program for people who are want to use our system to refer it to other clients. So all we want to do is support people in however they want to either build their own website or develop websites for other people. And it's a great system.
And you've got a basic package starting about $25 a month. Your full-on package is $99 a month. But as I'm looking at it, there's really, if you just start out at the basic, there's lots of places for people to grow. I see you have a catalog and e-commerce system built in, which is a huge issue for anybody. You might start a website, not think that you need it, but eventually you do need it. Adding it onto your website later often requires a complete rebuild or another website being designed. So those are nice features to add on as you move ahead.
I totally agree. Could not say it better, Steve.
And the only bone I have to pick with you is I see in your basic package you don't include the search engine optimization. And I think that that's something that, well, maybe not everybody. I guess if you're building a website that you don't care if people come to see, you don't have to pay attention to it. But who's really doing that and spending money on it?
I hate to tell you this, but there are an awful lot of people who just don't care. And so we created a package for people who don't care about SEO. I mean, all these other open source systems are really driven by programmers. It's what programmers want, all the geeky features, whereas we are 100% client driven. And that one of the things that came out was a whole group of people who don't care about SEO. So,
wow.
Now,
you and I have had some very compelling conversations in the past about things that people should pay attention to if they are developing a website or if they have a website that they're not happy with, the sort of things that they should boil back to really make good decisions as they move ahead. So what are if you had two or three top things for people to think about that their website should be doing for them for their small business, what are they?
Well, there's a couple of ways I approach this. Number one, think of your website as if it were an employee. Not something that you're going to spend a few dollars on and just leave alone. If you treated your website like an employee, well, let me reverse that. Would you let your employee sit around not doing anything day after day after day and not have any expectations from them? Well, no, but the vast majority of people have that exact same attitude towards their website. So we're trying to suggest that you should build the website so you have expectations and it has metrics and it has deliverables so you can actually get something from the web experience. And then the other thing I do to simplify how people should view their website is make a bold claim and then prove it. Those are the only two things your website should do. Number one, if you're not making a bold claim, why are you in business to begin with? Number two, prove it. Now, the prove it part of it is really the tough side of things, but then it's how well do you want to prove it? Initially, you might prove it by finding appropriate stock photography. But then later on, as you build your business, you'll replace that stock photography with really good original photography. So you're always proving to the outside audience why they should do business with you. And you should always try to improve on how you prove that bold statement.
Yourwebdepartment.com is the site. Paul Chato is my guest. Paul, thanks so much for coming on. You're going to have to do this again.
I would anytime, Steve. You're a brilliant raconteur.
Oh, I got to look that up. Thank you.
Try Google.
I will. That's Paul Chato. The website is yourwebdepartment.com. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech. Joining me online now is Mike Vardy from Stepcase Lifehack. Mike is my productivity expert, showing us how to get more out of our technology to make us more productive. And are you feeling pretty productive yourself these days, Mike?
I am feeling pretty productive. I'm getting a lot of stuff done out in the woods of Victoria. That we do have woods here, where I'm working on a book right now. So trying to get that. Yep.
What's the book about?
It's called The Front Nine: How to Start the New Year You Want Anytime You Want. And basically, it's about, you know, I'm tired of people saying that, you know, January 1st is when we have to start our new year. And so I'm basically putting together some sort of a plan so that people can basically start their new year whenever they want.
Okay. And so we can start a new one almost every week for those of us that have limited commitment to any one path.
Absolutely. And I mean, and then that way you're not stuck in the gym when it's really busy, you know, at the beginning of January. You can wait till March.
You can wait to start. Speaking of limited commitment, I wonder, you know, let's talk a little bit about some of the productivity apps out there, because I'm always looking for something that gives me an edge as far as becoming more productive and stuff like that. But I wonder if there's now so many different tools out there that we spend more time trying out tools to make us productive than actually being productive.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm kind of looking at now is the whole stop doing productive, start being productive aspect of things, because you're right, there's so many out there, no matter what platform you're using, whether it's PC, Mac, Android, iOS, whatever, there's so many out there. And I think that we're running into the problem where people are trying new tools, and they become the tools of the tools as a result. Mm-hmm. So now we're seeing a lot of gimmicky apps come out that are trying to entice people to try something different. This one app by RealMax Software in partnership with Impending is called Clear, and it's one of those new ones that's gotten a lot of buzz lately.
And what is its idea?
Well, it's for iOS, and what it is basically there are no buttons. So everything is swipe-based, gesture-based. You can have you can reorder your tasks by priority. You can have lists that are created, and it's all basically swipe stuff. It's very colorful. It makes really cool, pretty sounds when you complete something or whatnot. But my biggest problem with – I like to call it the to-do app for kids, actually.
Why?
Because it doesn't sync with anything. Like if the app was to crash, you don't. I mean, it's not meant for task management. It's meant for probably grocery lists or things that you need to get done that day. And if it goes away, oh well.
So it's not leveraged. So I'm not putting an appointment in my calendar and creating a to-do list item as a result of my appointment going in my calendar or in my email, dragging it out. I've got to create a new list for everything I do.
Absolutely. So it's the sort of the appeal of this thing is that it's I think it's a gateway to get people to use task managers. I think that's what they're looking at it as a way for getting people into, oh, this is really, it makes it joyous to create a list as opposed to tedious. But I don't think I don't think this kind of thing's going to last. I think we're having a lot of problems with people building apps that are about to-dos as opposed to the why to-dos. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. When you stop and when you look at most people's productivity, personal productivity using technology, if you are just having a coffee, saying what are the things that you can do that'll add most to your productivity? What are the things that kind of rise to top of mind for you? Are they the traditional getting things done kind of procedures?
I think that the biggest thing is to look far ahead. I think a lot of people, if you're looking at David Allen's Getting Things Done system, for example, or even like Stephen Covey or whatever, is that people tend to, because the books are so linear when you read them, it's all about capturing your ideas, putting them into a list, and then putting them into projects. But you really need to look far down the road as to why you're doing all of this stuff. Because if you start at that end, then you realize that some of this stuff, the whole mind like water approach, is that you can let this stuff go. Some things you may need to write down, some things you don't. I think there's no way we can get absolutely everything done, no matter what technology we're using. It's just not possible.
Yeah, you know, I did read the book, the Allen book that you're talking about, Getting Things Done, and I found it pretty profound in a couple of ways. And a lot of people follow it, almost to the point of it almost being a religion, I think. But, you know, there was the one thing that you're talking about is if you know that you have got something written down that you're going to pay attention to doing, that it frees your mind and you don't worry about it, that whole philosophy is very powerful. But the other philosophy that I think in that book that really kind of resonates with me is handling anything just once, making a decision on it when it arrives now in our inbox. It used to be in your tray, I guess, in your mail coming in. But as soon as it happens in that inbox, not just reading it and then letting it slide down the list where you have to go back and browse down your list of emails in order to see, you know, in order to make sure you're not missing something. I think that those things, for me, are the things that when I'm on top of my game, those are the things that I'm doing.
Well, and the thing is a lot of people, you mentioned email, a lot of people use email as their inbox, and that's the worst thing you could do for managing tasks. You can't manage tasks within email. Email was not meant for that. Paul Graham, who's a pretty profound, he's called a maker. He's written some really great posts. I think his blog is paulgraham.com. He's written about the idea that so many people are using their email applications as to-do lists and task managers. Can't do that because it's not meant for that. It was meant to receive messages. It's essentially the modern equivalent of the mailbox or even the telephone if you want to go to that degree. So I think you need to, when an email comes in, you need to put it into a task manager. And that's something that a lot of people have their a hard time wrapping their heads around because they say, you know, well, wait a minute, I already have this one thing. Why do I need another thing? But they're two completely separate things.
So what's your task manager of choice?
My task manager of choice right now is one called Asana, A-S-A-N-A, and it's at asana.com. And it's a web app. And the reason I like it is because of its ubiquity. It works on all platforms, so PC, Mac. They do have an iOS app, and they do have a mobile interface as well. And what it does is it allows for both team collaboration management, project management, but also you can scale it back to individual stuff. The great thing about it is that if you follow tasks in Asana or you're following a project, you get stuff sent right to your email inbox. You can reply right from within your email to tasks to say, hey, I've got this done, or here's the next update. And it's free. It's built by the guys, one of the co-founders of Facebook, Dustin Moskovitz, and another early Facebook employee, Justin Rosenstein. They put this thing together, and it's pretty slick.
So Asana, I'm going to check that out. Now, I have a problem that has just cropped up. I've switched back to iPhone. I was living on an Android phone for the longest time, so I switched over to iPhone. And something strange has happened to my address books just recently, where I've got my addresses in the Google addresses, I've got my addresses in the Apple address book, and I don't have anything syncing my addresses together right now. Is this a common problem, or is it just me?
No, it's not just you. It happened to me, too. Once iCloud showed up, so the thing is Google contacts, and when you're syncing them to your phone and iCloud, they don't tend to work well together. They duplicate everything. I'm imagining you've got everything duplicated.
No. I've got some things that are fine. But some things I go on my phone and I start, you know, autofilling somebody's address, and they're not there. And I go, well, wait a minute. And then I go into my Google contacts and they're there. So right now they aren't. So I'm afraid of how I'm going to go about approaching melding those two databases together, because I know everything is going to get duplicated and everything is going to get messed up, and I'm just going to be a really frustrated Steve.
Well, what I recommend you do then is just go into your Google contacts, so go into your Gmail interface, and export your contacts as a V card. So as a V, yeah. I think it's a CF file, and then just bring it into address book on your Mac and then sync it across that way. That way, at least you know that the address book on your Mac is up to date, and then it'll sync to iCloud and everything should be happy. That's what I had to do.
But then it won't be back in my Google. There's no way to sync the Google and the iCloud stuff together?
You can't, not at this point. Not that I'm aware of.
So you got to choose one or the other.
Got to choose one or the other.
And because I'm living again in the iCloud world, I should just go with the iPhone stuff.
The reason that I've been doing posts on Vardy.me about getting out of Google a little bit because
the privacy issue.
It's more the search issue. More the search your world. I don't think that if you're a search engine, you're getting a pure search if you're using Google Plus and all that stuff. You're getting for some people it's great because they get to find out what's happening right in their neck of the woods, and it's sort of geared around what you're doing within Google Plus and that kind of thing. But I've been using DuckDuckGo as my search engine because I'm getting purer search results. And I've been getting a lot of stuff out of Google as much as I can. You can't, let's put it this way, once you're in Google, you can't get out. So don't even try.
They're going to try. But you can get
a lot of stuff out of there if you want.
And I kind of hesitate to take those steps because the other thing is, of course, I'm using Google Calendar as my main calendar. And I think that's probably a bad idea as well.
Yeah, Google Calendar, I mean, I've been using Google Calendar a lot, but now there's what I use now to actually manage appointments and stuff, so making sure that people know when I'm available, is a service called Doodle.
Yes, I've been playing with that.
Yeah, it's really cool in that, because it can sync back, now that it's got the ability to sync back to your Mac to the calendars that are in iCal, so it can actually speak to it via this little app you install. I think it's called the Doodle iCal Converter or something like that. And it allows you, so it reads your iCal and then sends it back to Doodle saying, okay, here's when Mike's available and here's when Mike's not available. So you can schedule stuff, say for example, this call. We could say, okay, here when are you available? Let's go into Doodle. Oh, we're available here. Okay, I'm going to schedule it here. here and ask Mike if he can speak here, or ask Steve if he can speak here, and go from there. So those kind of solutions are cropping up more and more now, these days.
I use the Doodle as well. Now we're talking about this scheduling app, and the one that I found has a little more functionality for that. I don't know if you played with it yet. It's called Tungle Me, T-U-N-G-L-E Me, and it seemed to have better kind of business tools, because I could easily demark what times I was free and which I wasn't, and it linked again through to my Google Calendar. So that wasn't a bad solution, but very similar to Doodle.
Yeah, and it's owned by RIM too. They bought RIM acquired Tungle Me not too long ago. So take that as you will. Whether
well, let's throw some support behind the Canadian company, because it's something they make. Great. We're going to support them in a product they make absolutely no money in.
Fair enough.
So, but bottom line is, so you're okay with people staying in Google Calendar though.
Yeah, and I mean, Asana is great too in that it can sync to your calendar as well. So I can actually sync it over to whatever it creates a URL, which then I can put into Google Calendar. And so I can monitor all the stuff through there as well. So people can see when I'm working on something, if we're in a team environment or what have you. So it's really great for that. But if you're looking for, let's say, a task manager that's a PC-based, Outlook works a lot for a lot of people. As long as you use your inbox email as the email, and then you start to use that little, you know, that little area called the to-do and the tasks area in Outlook that so many people don't use. Use that, and then the calendar, of course, too. And then in for the Mac, OmniFocus by Omni Group is the sort of the Cadillac of productivity systems. They've got such a great suite, both for iOS. The iPad app is fantastic. The iPhone app is great. And the great thing about using OmniFocus on the iPhone is that there is a way to get your Siri. If you're using Siri, you can actually have reminders sync up to OmniFocus. So you can tell Siri, remind me at 4 o'clock to go pick up some milk from the store. And it will send it to the OmniFocus list. There's a way to do that. And then it puts it into your OmniFocus task manager. So you could use it for almost anything. So they've got Siri integration for OmniFocus now.
Okay, now you've got me a little bit confused, because you're saying task manager, OmniFocus, but then you were telling me Asana. Are they different?
They are different. I use Asana because it covers all the bases. It covers both PC and Mac. So because I deal with a lot of people who use PCs at LifeHack. But if you're a Mac only and you're using it, and again, OmniFocus is primarily for individual task management. So you can't really share tasks with anybody.
With a group environment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I really like Asana and the fact that it gives me ultimate control over all the platforms. But if you only care about doing stuff on the Mac, OmniFocus is a great way to go. And if you're using the PC, then a lot of people are still using.
You know, I don't think I've ever been more productive than when I was living on the PC and just using Outlook as my only tool for all that sort of stuff, because it was simple and I knew the tool inside and out and I used it. And now I sometimes find that I scramble from one application to another. And also, because it's become modular, the search for the perfect tool that really resonates with me, that I think there's something in that that's worth considering.
I was just speaking to the other editor earlier before we went on the call here, and we were talking about how the forced simplicity is the guardian for against overwhelm. And I think that's what's happening, is a lot of people are like, I'm even using paper. That's a form of technology.
Where do you get it from? Using paper. what's the website?
It comes in some fancy notebooks now. See, that's the thing. Even paper's fancy these days. But I mean, it's all about. But I think you're right. I think what's happening is that there's so many tools out there that people just throw their arms up in the air and go, okay, I'm just going to go with what I know. Which is, I think, why a lot of people use their email application as their inbox instead of just for email.
Well, you've given me enough productivity apps to make me unproductive for the next few days. So let's switch channels for a second. And last week, of course, we had the new iPad. Not the iPad 3, but the new iPad released by the folks at Apple. Were you excited? Was it ho-hum? Where did you sit?
I have the original iPad, so I was fairly excited. Yeah, I didn't buy the iPad.
So it is time to upgrade for you.
It is. I'm a guy who skips generations.
Yeah.
So historically, I've had the iPhone, and then I had the iPhone 3GS, and I went to the 4S. So it's time for me to upgrade. The Retina display is the big thing. I mean, it especially when I moved from the 3GS to the 4S, I really noticed a difference in the screen resolution. And for people who are reading using their iPad or watching videos, or even, you know, I mean, writing, even if you're writing on your iPad, the screen resolution is going to be that much better for you. So I think that's one big reason to upgrade. If you've got the iPad 2, There's not a lot to get excited about, because there's not that much more that, I mean, the processor speed's a bit faster, but I wouldn't jump at it. If you're the original iPad owner, yeah, it's a worthy upgrade. If you don't have an iPad, man, you're going to get a really good one now. And I mean, considering that a lot of the, I would say that the tablet market, Apple's got a really, really strong hold on at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a lot for competitors to jump in and take that away.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how people what their purchasing habits are. You're the second or third person I've talked to who is still an iPad One owner, who've all said, yeah, it's time to move. And that skipping generation mentality has resonated a few times. And I have an iPad 2 now, and I am seriously thinking about not buying, about mm-hmm. not upgrading, because it does everything I want, and there's nothing that compelling in the new one that makes me wanna lay down that much money. But the other interesting wild card in it is I'm wondering how many people are saying, you know what, the dollars don't make sense, but you know, maybe I'll buy an iPad 2 now at $100 less than they used to be, because now it's starting to make economic sense, because it's starting to hit the price point that makes sense for some people.
Well, yeah, and the other thing a lot of people don't take into account is the case factor. I mean, I've got two cases for my iPad 1 that will not work with the iPad 3, and people who are using the iPad 2 will have the same thing. They'll be using, you know, the Adonit Writer, or maybe they've got a Dodo case or something like that, that maybe the iPad 3 won't fit in, or maybe it will.
Yeah, it's going to be a near call on a lot of those.
Exactly. So, I mean, those kind of cases aren't necessarily cheap. I mean, they run anywhere from, I mean, some people are paying like 80, 90, 100 bucks for a case, depending on what they're using, if it's got a keyboard built into it, especially.
Yes.
But I mean, the thing is that for me, I mean, the reason the upgrade is a good one now, because I can give this iPad to my wife, or even to my daughter. I mean, she could use it now. I mean, they use it a lot for reading and for playing games and for stuff like that. So it becomes that media device where I can say, or you know, we're going for a drive, I can finally, here you go, here's the iPad 1, and not be worried about them, you know, don't wreck my iPad, don't wreck my iPad, kind of thing. Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is the iOS eventually won't work on this current version of the iPad that I have, so that's another reason to upgrade too.
Yeah, it'll be orphaned at some point. Now, what about the LTE support? Is it something that's one thing that I did notice, because I found that I'm using my iPad tethered to my iPhone or on Wi-Fi all the time when I'm on the road, far more than I ever thought I would. So LTE support is something that I was really interested in seeing them include, because I've experienced the speed of LTE, and it is, well, it's better than I'm getting at home. So it's, you know, it's awesome.
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah, I mean, I've got the 3G iPad actually.
Oh, you
do? Yeah, I have the original one. So and it's funny, because as I'm sitting here in this sort of secluded cabin that doesn't have Wi-Fi, I've been using the 3G a lot, and I'm pretty impressed with. I mean, it's one of those things where you don't know you need it until you want it, and then you've got it. Yeah. And I think the 4G / LTE, I think, is going to be a fantastic addition. When I buy the iPad 3, I'll be getting it, and I'll probably. Had I not bought the 3G version of this one, had used it elsewhere, I'd definitely be considering it now. Now, keep in mind, if you're Canadians, I know when I took my iPad down to the States, the 3G wouldn't work the way that I had it set up with Roger. You actually have to have a full-on plan. So you can't just go in and buy the card and buy a pay-as-you-go or whatever. You actually have to have a plan, and you have to do some... at least in the past, you've had to do some phone calls to say, hey, I'm going to the States. How do I make this happen? So keep that in mind if you're traveling with it.
And as far as the overall market's concerned, does this just stretch Apple's lead to kind of insurmountable for the foreseeable future in the tablet world?
Well, I mean, the thing about Apple is that some people say it's the tortoise and the hare, and they're the hare. I tend to think Apple's the tortoise, and that they've made slow, steady progress since the first iPad came out, and the others are going to be racing, but they're going to get tired. I mean, there'd be the stylus that some of these companies are coming out with to say, well, but it has a pen. And I think that we're running into the problem now for the competitors is that they are, because the brand identity is so far behind now, that they're in a lot of trouble. It's going to have to be the same thing that happened with the PC market. Is they're going to have to be really low cost. They're going to be cheap. They're going to have to be in that price bracket in order to compete with Apple at this point. They can't compete on the quality, but they'll be able to compete on price, but they're going to have to be significantly lower.
And the App Store, I mean, they just passed their 25 billionth download, I think it was, or it was an insane number of downloads. And
that's the linchpin in this whole thing, is that the Apple's got the infrastructure already in place with the software as well. And if you consider that Google has made some change, what do they call their App Store now? They called it Play, the marketplace. Yeah. The thing is, when so many changes go on in the competitors' environments and Apple remains slow and steady or at least stable, and they've got control, I mean, it's very difficult. You may see a lot of other tablets running Apple iOS jailbroken, perhaps, but I don't think that there's going to be much competition for the next little while in this market.
Mike, I'm going to let you get back to your writing. So for people that are looking for more of Mike's sage advice, Stepcase Lifehack is the site he's editor of. Vardy.me has anything that doesn't go on Stepcase Lifehack, and we will have links to all of the different places that he talked about, and the apps that he talked about, the productivity apps that he talked about that are going to make us less productive as we discover them. We'll have those on our site. Mike, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Steve.
Coming up in just a few moments, Theo Horsdall from London Drugs will be joining us. A little bit of housekeeping, a reminder to drop by the website. We've got all sorts of resources there. Of course, all of the old shows are available if you want to have a listen to any of the podcasts. They're all available either at iTunes or at dottotech.com. Plus there we host all of our contests. We still have one contest going. You can win a copy of TurboTax to help you with preparing your taxes if you are so inclined to do your own, which I highly encourage everybody to do. TurboTax is a great way to go, and you can enter to win a copy of TurboTax. You can fill out all of your taxes online. Of course, I also need to thank our sponsors, MaxStation and London Drugs. Dottotech would not be around without the support of those two fine companies, so I encourage you to patronize them as often as you can. Joining me online, Theo Horsdall from London Drugs. Theo, I think almost a year ago, Cedric came on this show, and he was talking about the Pogo Plug, which I think is a great product, and they've been updating their product and bringing out a whole bunch of new offerings. So bring me up to speed on what's happening in the Pogo Plug world.
Well, the Pogo Plug, just to recap what it does, it's basically a device that you can plug any hard drive into, and it instantly creates your own portable cloud storage option, yet allows you to keep all of your files in your own place. One of the things I love about the cloud is wherever you are, from a web browser, any computer, anywhere you're basically connected to an internet device, you can access files and music and videos, anything like that. Some people like me prefer to keep, I'm an old fogey, I guess. I prefer to keep all of my data where I know where it is, at least for now. So this is a marriage of two worlds. Your own personal data in one place, and then allowing it to access the cloud anywhere.
So the concept of cloud computing means, of course, we just take our data, we upload it to the cloud, to the internet, and then we can access it from any device, from our phone, from our iPad or tablet, from our notebook, from our desktop, and from anywhere that has an internet connection, we can access that data. A brilliant concept. But what Pogo Plug does is it says, hey, you can just have a hard drive sitting on your desk that we can plug into your router, and you can put your data on that, and once it's there, you can access it from anywhere with any device as though it's on the cloud. So basically, you're creating your own web server.
You got it. And I'll just go through a kind of a quick usage scenario, for example. So you have photos on your hard drive, or even an SD card. It has an SD card slot now. So what you could do is, from any browser, you can access those photos and share them with whomever and whoever you choose. Anywhere in the world that has an internet connection, yet you keep the files on your own device.
And you access it just through a web browser? You just have a URL, a unique URL you go to?
Web browser, app on your iOS device, like an iPad or an iPhone.
Oh, there's a Pogo Plug app? Okay.
Absolutely. Any Android device. I imagine that you'd be able to do it on BlackBerry. So they say any mobile device, any tablet, any web browser, any computer, as long as you've got an internet connection, you can access your files.
It's pretty sweet. And they're not expensive. They're quite inexpensive.
They are. I mean, the Pogo Plug Mobile is the new device that they have, which we carry. It's only $79. That's it.
Now, it doesn't have any storage, so you plug your own hard drive into it, and then you also plug it hardware into your wireless, into your router, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly how it works.
Okay, so the Pogo Plug Mobile is the new one. The Pogo Plug Classic is their old one. So what are the new features of the mobile?
The new features are it has an SD card slot, so you could literally take some pictures with your, you know, digital camera, plug your SD card into your Pogo Plug Mobile, and instantly upload them to or transfer them to your computer, and at the same time make them accessible anywhere you go remotely.
Okay, so that's the big deal there is the USB is the SD card. That's kind of the biggest.
And it's a lot smaller as well. It has a much smaller footprint.
It's got a small footprint, and so they're really quite simple devices. They do a lot, but it's basically how you fold it in. Now, I'm looking at their website, and I'm seeing they've got a whole bunch of new offerings, including a Pogo Plug Business. What's the story on that one?
Pogo Plug Business, it's something we don't care. We can specially order it. Okay. I believe it has some additional software not really suitable for the retail.
Can track the number of times a file is viewed and that sort of
right.
stuff. So it's got a lot of web serving capabilities as far as analytics and that sort of stuff built in as well.
Yeah.
Got it.
I just want to get back. One of the main features and one of their claims to fame is they say it takes 60 seconds to create your own cloud. So if you want to share your data online, if you want to access your files from anywhere, and you're confused with all of these online offerings, and you're not really trusting where your data is, this is an excellent solution to let you create your own cloud storage option. Share all of your photos, share all of your documents, share all of your music, and even your videos with anybody, all from this one device.
60 seconds, $80, and you're a publisher.
You're done.
Theo Horstels with London Drugs, thanks so much for your time, Theo.
Thank you.
We have run out of time for this week's show. I need to thank our guests, Paul Chatto, Mike Vardy, and Theo Horstall. And since we talked to Theo about Pogo Plug, the folks from Pogo contacted me, and guess what? They've got a nice Pogo Plug, the mobile product, to give away. So we're going to be posting that on the website. If you want to win a Pogo Plug, drop by the Dottotech website, and you can enter there to win one. We'll give it away in about 2 weeks. So I'm really pleased, and thanks to the folks at Pogo for that. I also have to thank you all for finding us here online. Next week, it will be again a podcast, and then the beginning of April, we'll be back on radio with more shows. I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning into Dotto Tech. We will see you next time right here.